Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. I'm glad that you're here with me to talk digestion. Weird Al Yankovic is going to help set the mood for us and set the tone. Eat it.
Don't you tell me you're full, just eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if it's boiled or fried.
It doesn't matter if it's boiled or fried, just eat it. Yes, indeed. Mr. Yankovic, helping us set the tone. As we get ready to move into a discussion about digestive system. Yes, our digestive system. The digestive system of us Homo sapiens. Yes, indeed. I want to know. What do you know about your digestive system? I mean, is everything that we've heard about our system true? Well, WebMD is going to help us with that. We're going to check out what we know about our digestive system. And here's one of the first questions I want to ask you. When it comes to bubble gum, yes, bubble gum, chewing gum, is it a really, really, really bad idea to swallow your gum? You put that juicy fruit, that spearmint, that double mint, whatever kind of gum you like, maybe it's one of the fruit stripe gums. You know, they're making them so that the flavor lasts a lot longer now than they did years ago. And you chew your gum. Yum, yum, yum. But then you decide, you know what? I've had enough of this. The flavor's still pretty good, but I'm just tired of chewing. But you don't have anything around you in which to dispose of your gum. And you don't want to throw it on the sidewalk because you don't want anyone to step on it. You don't want to do what some people do and just stick it under the desk or on the seat somewhere where someone will sit on it. Or, you know, they're maybe getting ready to shift the desk around and they kind of put the hands right on the spot where you left your gum. You don't want to do that to people because you've had that experience yourself where you got ready to move a desk around a little bit, shift its position, and right underneath the edge of that surface, you put your hand on somebody's chewed gum that they had stuck to the underside of the desk. You don't want to do that. And so you're thinking about your other options. What else can you do with this gum? You're tired of it. A bright light comes on inside your head. And you think to yourself, hey, I can just go ahead and swallow this gum. It's just a little bit of gum. It's not like I'm going to be consuming 300 calories with this one stick of gum. But then you remember, oh, man, wait a minute, though. Hold up, hold up, hold up. I know that it is bad to swallow the gum because the digestive system can't handle it. This gum will be in my gut for months to come, maybe even years. All that other food that I'll be moving out, and the gum will still be here in my belly or somewhere in my intestine or in my intestine and my belly. And so you say, well, man, I'm stuck. What do I do with this gum? I'm tired of chewing this gum. I'm tired of it now. Well, it might seem like gum could stick around in your gut for a long time. After all, it does not dissolve in your mouth like other foods. Even meat dissolves to an extent in our mouths. You know how it works. Our saliva begins that digestive process, beginning that breakdown of the foods. And some of those foods are so ready to be dissolved that they really can melt completely dissolve, I guess I should say, completely in your mouth before it ever hits your throat. Almost like it's a liquid, a solid turned liquid. I'm trying to remember which food I've had that experience with. It doesn't come to my mind right offhand. But, you know, that gum doesn't break down anywhere as much as most of the foods that we eat and do swallow that are designed to be swallowed. And here's the thing. It's not just the mouth and the beginning of the digestive process that doesn't work that well on gum. Even in our stomachs, the gum isn't broken down the way other foods that are designed to be swallowed are broken down, right? Well, check this out. The experts saying that that's not really a totally true statement. Gum does not gum up your insides. The digestive system moves it along just like everything else, and it comes out in our stool in a few days. So even though, and that's why I said it's not totally true, the gum doesn't break down like other foods break down, but it does move along the way other foods move along. It doesn't get stuck somewhere in the stomach, somewhere in the belly. It gets moved along too. And so I'm not saying go ahead and chew your gum, but I am saying if you do swallow it, I'm not saying don't swallow it, but if you do swallow it, you can rest assured that at some point that gum that entered your body is going to leave your body. All right. How about this one? How many of you really, really, really like spicy foods? I mean spicy. I remember watching my mother before she had to change, eating up some spice. She would make one of her favorite meats. She would sometimes do this with some of her vegetables too, like collard greens, but especially on some of her favorite meats. She would get that meat cooked just right, and the lady could cook. I'm telling you, my mother could cook. And she would get that meat cooked just right, and we'd all put our food on our plates. Mom would get hers on her plate, and she'd just start smiling as she pulled out the hot sauce, green peppers, and Tabasco sauce. And very often, she wouldn't put the green peppers on her meat. She would start, usually, if I'm not mistaken, with the hot sauce. And she'd sprinkle a little bit of hot sauce, taste it. That's not enough. And she'd sprinkle some more hot sauce, taste it. That's not quite enough. And she would usually sprinkle, and I'm saying sprinkle, almost to the point of pouring hot sauce on her meat about 4 or 5 times before she'd have a big smile come on her face and she'd say, okay, now that's what I was looking for. That's what I needed. That's what I wanted. Then she would get the hot peppers that were in the jar, the glass jar. And like I said, she wouldn't really put the peppers on her meat. She would just sprinkle out some of the juice that was in the jar onto her meat. And she'd usually go about 3, 4, 5 rounds before she was finally satisfied. Ooh, yeah. That's what she'd say. Ooh, yeah, that's hot. That's good. That's good. And then she'd get the Tabasco sauce and repeat the process all over again. About 4 or 5 sprinklings before she was finally satisfied. And then, after having put a fifth of a bottle of hot sauce and a fifth of a bottle of Tabasco sauce and a fifth of a bottle of hot pepper sauce juice on her meat, she was ready to throw down. She was ready to chow down. And she'd be putting it in her mouth. Ooh-wee, this is hot. This is hot. This is hot. And she'd be enjoying it, sometimes bringing tears to her eyes. And it seemed like the more tears rolled out of her eyes, the bigger her smile got. Well, let me ask you this. Do spicy foods cause ulcers? Now, I'm going to want you to really think through this. And ultimately, for all of these that I'm going to be talking about, I want you to reach your own final decision. I'll be sharing with you what some of the experts are saying, what their conclusions are. You reach your own conclusions now. And you may even want to consult your doctor before you get into much of this. But listen to this now. Here's your question. Do spicy foods cause ulcers? They say no. They say that people used to think that too much spicy food would give you an ulcer. But he's saying that the experts now have concluded that most of the sores in the stomach lining happen because of an infection with bacteria called Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori for short. The sores in the stomach lining happen because of an infection with H. pylori or because of pain medications such as aspirin, ibuprofen, or naproxen. They said that foods with a lot of heat may make ulcers worse for some people, but they don't cause the ulcers. Okay, now I want you to remember this. I don't want to say this each time, so lock this into your memory bank now. I'll say it every once in a while, just in case someone may not have joined us at the beginning of this conversation, but I'm not going to say it every time that I mention a myth, all right? But here's what they're saying. The spicy foods do not cause ulcers. They may make them worse, but they don't cause them. What are your thoughts about that? Each one of these now, you draw your own conclusion. Think these things through, and you draw your own conclusion. All right. You know that when it comes to moving furniture around, we were told for a long, long time, don't move that furniture by yourself, because if you lift something that's too heavy, it can cause you to develop a hernia. Is that true or false? Well, they're saying that also is not true. They say it's a myth. They say that it's one, but not the only cause of hernias. So really and truly, I would say that is not a myth. If they're saying it is one cause of injuries, I would say that that is not a myth. Heavy lifting can indeed cause hernias, is what they're saying. If it is indeed one cause of the injury, you might also get them, though, from long-lasting constipation. A hernia from long-lasting constipation. They say that you can also develop a hernia as a result of, get this, a cough. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a cough. A hernia because of a cough. Well, what is a hernia about? Well, hernias happen when there's both pressure and an opening or weakness in muscles that line the inside of your belly. And so an organ or a fatty tissue then bulges out through that opening. An organ or fatty tissue will bulge out through that opening that's in the lining of the inside of the belly. They're most common, though, in the groin, the belly button, or the upper part of the stomach. But we can conclude, based on how they word it, that it is not a myth that heavy lifting causes hernias. Now, if someone were to say heavy lifting is the only cause of hernias, then I would say that's a myth. But if we have heard that heavy lifting causes hernias, and heavy lifting can indeed be even one cause of hernias, I would say that's not a myth. What would you say? Okay. How about this one? We've heard of cirrhosis, and very often when people say cirrhosis, they use it in a clause, and they'll say cirrhosis of the liver. So here's a point. Here's a statement. Tell me if it's true or false. Tell me if this is myth or reality. Only alcoholics get cirrhosis. Only alcoholics get cirrhosis. Would you say that is myth or reality? Well, check out what they say about it. It is true that alcoholism is the most common cause of cirrhosis, and that's a condition in which healthy liver cells are damaged and replaced by scar tissue. And so alcoholism is the most common cause of cirrhosis, but there are other causes, such as hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And although drinking too much almost always causes some liver damage, it does not always lead to cirrhosis. Again, where healthy liver cells are damaged and replaced by scar tissue. So, based on how the statement is worded, only alcoholics get cirrhosis, I think we can agree that that is a myth, since alcoholism is only one way, one cause of cirrhosis. All right, how about this one? How many of you really do like to eat things like nuts? How many of you have heard of something called diverticulitis? Diverticulitis. All right. This is one of the statements that ties those two together, nuts and diverticulitis. For a long time, people have said that nuts lead to diverticulitis. And as it turns out, in the past, doctors told people with this condition, wherein pouches in the wall of the colon get inflamed and infected, to avoid nuts, corn, popcorn, and food that has small seeds, like strawberries. The fear was that pieces of these food would lodge in the pouches and cause pain. But new studies suggest the opposite, that people who eat a high-fiber diet have a lower risk of diverticulitis. So, diverticulitis, a disease wherein the pouches in the wall of the colon get inflamed and infected. And people were told, don't eat any nuts, don't eat corn, don't eat popcorn, don't eat strawberries, or any other food that has small seeds. And you notice that those foods tend to be high in fiber. And we have been indeed told that fiber is good for us. And so now they're saying, nah, you don't need to avoid nuts just because of diverticulitis. If there's something else going on in your body that the nuts may be causing problems, that indicates that the nuts are causing problems, okay. But if it's all about diverticulitis and it's only about diverticulitis, the experts are now saying you're okay with the nuts. Just eat it. Just eat it.
Yourself to blame, so eat it.